Much Ado About Moo. There are many translations of the Moo koan. It is the first koan in the collection of 48 koans of the Mumankan or Gateless Gate. Here is Eken Roshi's translation of the case. A monk asked Chaocho, "Has the dog Buddha nature or not?" Chaocho said, "Moo." Woman's comment. For the practice of Zen, it is imperative that you pass through the barrier set up by the ancestral teachers. For subtle realization, it is of the utmost importance that you cut off the mind road. If you do not pass the barrier of the ancestors, if you do not cut off the mind road, then you are ghosts clinging to the bushes and grasses. What is the barrier of the ancestral teachers? It is just this one word, Mu, the one barrier of our faith. We call it the gateless barrier of the Zen tradition. When you pass through this barrier, you will not only interview Chaocho immediately, you will walk hand in hand with all the ancestral teachers in the successive generations of our lineage. The hair of your eyebrows entangled with theirs, seeing with the same eyes, hearing with the same ears. Won't that be fulfilling? Is there anyone who would not want to pass this barrier? So then make your whole body a mass of doubt, and with your 360 bones and joints, and your 84,000 hair follicles, concentrate on this one word, Moo. Day and night, keep digging into it. Don't consider it to be nothingness. Don't think in terms of has and has not. It is like swallowing a red-hot iron ball. You try to vomit it out, but you can't. Gradually, you purify yourself, eliminating mistaken knowledge and attitudes you have held from the past. Inside and outside become one. You're like a mute person who has had a dream. You know it for yourself alone. Suddenly, Mu breaks open. The heavens are astonished. The earth is shaken. It is as though you have snatched the great sword of General Quan. When you meet the Buddha, you kill the Buddha. When you meet Bodhidharma, you kill Bodhidharma. At the very cliff edge of birth and death, you find the great freedom. In the six worlds and the four modes of birth, you enjoy a samadhi of frolic and play. How then should you work with it? Exhaust all your life energy on this one word, Moo. If you do not falter, then it's done. A single spark lights your Dharma candle. Wu Men's verse. Dog, Buddha nature, the full presentation of the whole. With a bit of has or has not, body is lost, life is lost. Reflections. Chaocho lived to be 120 years. His dates were 778 to 897. He had his first experience of Kensho when he was 17. He said about it, "I was ruined and homeless." He studied with Nanchuan for about 60 years. Nanchuan died, and then Chaocho went on pilgrimage through China. Before departing, he made a famous statement that if he were to meet a child of 3 years old who could teach him, he would become the child's pupil. And if he were to meet someone over 100 years old whom he could teach, then he would teach that person. He finally ended his wanderings after 20 years and began teaching at 80 for another 40 years. His mode of teaching was to speak softly. They say his lips gave off light. I guess if one were to list the two most famous koans, they would be Mu and Haku and Sound the One Hand. Probably more has been written about Mu than any other koan. So who am I to add my own two cents? Writing, and in this case, talking about Mu, is like trying to describe to someone who has never had a Coca-Cola how the soda tastes. The only way to know Coke is to drink it. Indeed, when I read the exotic descriptions of wine tastings, I wonder. Likewise, the only way to know what Mu is all about is to practice Mu, to do Mu, to be Mu. All words, all descriptions, explications, analyses miss the mark. And yet, it is incumbent upon those of us who are teachers to try to express the Dharma in words. Even though Dharma itself cannot be verbally expressed, knowing that words miss the mark, the only hope I have in writing about Mu is that you will plunge yourself into the depths of Mu. The incident of this koan took place during the Tang Dynasty of roughly 1,500 years ago. It took a few hundred years for the koan to take off and become more than the verbal exchange cited in the koan. The word Mu transcends the koan. It transforms the koan. It becomes greater or at least other than the koan. It takes on cosmic, supernatural, dharanic, mantric significance. It goes way beyond what the original compilers of the koan had in mind, what either the questioning monk or Chaocho had in mind. Much has been made of the koan. It defies translation, explication, and understanding. In the canon of koan literature, it is preeminent. In the most famous collection of koans, the Mumonkan, the editor or compiler Wu Men says he spent 8 years working on Mu before he was able to get it. Eiken Roshi, who says he has spent a lifetime working on Mu, is now in his 90s and probably still working with Mu. Mu has transcended its own text, transcended the Chaocho, the nameless monk who asked the famous question. The koan collections, which contain the koan, and the thousands of Zen masters who have worked with Mu and have given this koan to the many more thousands of students to work with. Mu has taken on a life of its own, in much the same way literary creations have taken on lives of their own and reached realms of existence the original creators never dreamed of. Such characters as Don Quixote, Sherlock Holmes, or Hamlet, each has surpassed the imaginations and intent of their authors. Don Quixote far exceeds anything Cervantes had intended. So has Sherlock Holmes. It got to a point where the original creator, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, hated Holmes and tried to kill him off. But his readers would not accept the death, and Sherlock Holmes had to resume life and adventures. The preeminent literary creation of all time is Hamlet. Hamlet far surpassed anything Shakespeare may have dreamed of. Today, Hamlet continues to enchant, bewilder, challenge, and seriously upset all who encounter him. Same is true of Mu. One thinks of the Japanese monks from the medieval days. They would meet late at night outside their monasteries, sit on the wet grass, and howl at the moon like a pack of wolves at the top of their lungs. Mu! 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 Night after night. In my own days of training at Grayson Seminary, the former Dodge Estate in Riverdale, the Dyson room would often reverberate with the shouting screams of Mu, which came from within it. What an impression those moose screams made on the student sitting below in the zendo. One could actually feel the student, male or female, enter the daisen room and then hear the sounds of moo coming from that room. The sounds would be different with each student, and one never knew who, if anyone, ever passed the koan. All we heard was moo, moo, moo. Whenever I entered the daisen room, performed my bows, and sat in front of Roshi Bernie, together we would howl moo at the top of our lungs, each trying to out-moo the other. I don't think I ever succeeded. Bernie's moo growl was indeed very loud. Sometimes in the zendo, during a deep samadhi zazen, Bernie would very quietly whisper, holding moo for the length of a very long breath. Then with the next breath, he would up the volume just a little bit and moo. Then again louder, then louder and louder. Others in the zendo, one by one, would join him in moo, until the entire zendo would be shouting, screaming at the top of their collective lungs. Moo! Moo! What does this thunderous moo have to do with soft-spoken Chaucho? It is said Chaucho never raised his voice. Would Chaucho be astounded at what moo has become? Is the moo which stormed through the centuries related to the moo of Chaucho? When I sit with moo, I wonder about the whispered response of Chaucho from his light-giving lips. I wonder if Chaucho's moo tapped into the infinite light of the universe, the light that in Buddhism is known as Amitabha, the light that embraces, supports, enlivens, and gives comfort to all beings in the universe. Chaucho may not have dreamt of the thunderous power of his response. He stepped into the wonderful, beautiful, powerful dream and sometimes nightmare of moo. One can work with this koan in two ways. First as a koan, second as a mantra. As a koan, look carefully at the actual text. Is there a paradox in the koan? Is it the question? Is it Chaucho's response? Why yes in one version and no in another? What is the relative in the koan? What is the absolute in the koan? Query every aspect of the koan. Why a dog? Why not a cat? Or a fish? Or an artichoke? Or a plum blossom? What does the monk's question really mean? Why does he ask that question? Is he testing Chaucho? If so, does Chaucho realize he's being tested? If so, does Chaucho respond to the test? If so, does Chaucho pass the test? As a mantra, chant the word moo. Moo your in-breath, moo your out-breath. Moo your slow-walking kinin. Moo your fast-walking kinin. Moo your chopsticks when you eat. Moo your pee in the toilet. Don't mow the lawn, moo it. Don't chop moo. Don't chop wood, moo it. Moo your head down to rest. Let your eyes moo the eyes of another. Moo the pain or anxiety or trouble or joy or happiness of another. Moo every aspect of your being. Moo in the deepest recesses of your being, of your heart, of your stomach, of your intestines. When you see, see moo. When you hear, hear moo. When you taste, taste moo. When you touch, touch moo. When you feel, feel moo, moo, moo. The translation I broke my teeth on is Yamada Roshi's. His translation is the only one which has the phrase, in all earnestness. A monk asked Joshua in all earnestness, Does a dog have Buddha nature or not? Joshu said, moo. This phrase tells me that the monk was seriously searching and working to understand the issue of Buddha nature. The monk knows, as you all know, that one of the basic teachings of Buddhism is that all sentient beings contain or have Buddha nature. This teaching is first presented in the Nirvana Sutra. Later, Dogen Zenji turned the original statement of the Nirvana Sutra and said not that all sentient beings have or contain Buddha nature, but that all beings are Buddha nature. But this is another Dharma talk. Let's stick to mu now. All sentient beings have or are Buddha nature. The monk knows this. You all know this. So why the question? Was the monk asking about how far Buddha nature goes? How far one can apply the teaching of Buddha nature? Does it include all of the realms? Not just the animal realm, which the dog represents, but all of them. The hell dwellers, the hungry spirits, the fighting demons, the animals, the humans, and lastly, the heavenly beings. Does the teaching include the hell dwellers? Those who are murderers, rapists, thieves, sex offenders, psychopaths, those who seem to have no redeeming qualities? Can this teaching apply to these people, to the scum of the earth, the Hitlers, Stalins, Borgias, Sards, Amins, Milosevic's, the torturers, executioners, those who ruthlessly commit genocide or have committed genocide, who wiped out entire civilizations, American Indians, Incas, Aztecs, Armenians, Jews? Can the teaching of Buddha nature apply to these hell dwellers? And what about the hungry ghosts, those whose insatiable greed sucks out the lifeblood of all they touch? The angry, fighting demons, those who inflict fierce violence upon others, who smash and gouge and rip bodies with knives, grappling hooks, Uzis, bombs. Can the teaching of Buddha nature also apply to them? What about the animal realm? Let's not be precious and idealistic about this realm. You know how cute our dog Sancho is. Yet, on one of our walks, he chased, trapped, and captured a newborn fawn. He tumbled it about with his jaws and ripped it with his claws and teeth before I could get to him. On TV, the focus is to satisfy the bloodlust of viewers, even in animal programs. Extreme violence among animals, the endless shark programs, the alligator programs, the ubiquitous tiger, leopard, cheetah, wild dogs, wild grizzly bear, wolf programs, all overflowing with a violent, preying viciousness of the realm of animals. Are they also included in the teaching of Buddha nature? Need I go on? Can you appreciate the anguish of the monk? Can you appreciate the phrase, in all earnestness? And we turn to Chaozhou. He replies, mu. Also, please note, only in the Yamada translation is there an exclamation point after the word mu. Because of that punctuation, Chaozhou's response has usually been interpreted as a Rinzai shout, "Moo!" I don't agree with this interpretation. If Chaozhou never raised his voice, and when he spoke, his voice was so sweet that you could hear the birds sing, then the shouting "Moo!" is impossible to accept. This is not Chaozhou. This is beyond Chaozhou. So what do we do with Chaozhou's mu? What is Chaozhou's mu? In some of the translation, the word doesn't even appear. The word is simply translated as no. To what is Chaozhou saying no? Is he saying no in response to the question? Or to the fact of the question itself? Or is his response both to the question and to the fact of the question? And by so doing, does he solve Mark's dilemma? Is he saying the question is wrong? The question is rhetorical. The question is not the question. Buddha nature not only reaches into the heart of the animal realm, but into the very marrow of all creations. Mu becomes yes. Mu becomes Buddha nature. Mu is Buddha nature. And all creation is included. Mu is the saving Dharani of all creation. Mu is a thousand eyes and thousand arms of Avalokiteshvara, of Tara, of Kuan Yin, of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Mu is a salvific love of Jesus Christ, who died for all sentient beings, sinners as well as saints. Can you imagine anyone being excluded from the love of Christ? Mu is the saving, healing, loving compassion of Shakyamuni Buddha. It's because of Mu that Margaret and I went to the prisons to tell the people there that no matter what they have done, murder, kidnapping, arson, rape, whatever, they are also included in Mu. Mu is Atadipa. Mu is within. Mu is your in-breath and your out-breath. Mu is the circulation of your blood. Mu is the beating of your heart. So can you actually ever pass this koan? Remember Woman and Eiken Roshi. Notice Woman's words in his commentary. He calls Mu the gateless gate. If a gate is gateless, does that mean there is no gate? Or does that mean the gate is invisible? Or does that mean Atadipa? Does that mean the gate is gateless because it is not there? It is here, within. It is our thoughts, our opinions, our beliefs, our prejudices, our preconceptions, this Dharma talk, our books, our CDs, our music, our literature, our philosophy, our lovers, our mothers, our fathers, our children, our families, our friends, our religions, our non-religions, you name it. It is all within, and it is the toughest gate of all to get through. Woman tells us, assures us, that Mu is able to penetrate the gate. So, can you penetrate the gate? Have you gone through? Have I gone through? Are these words of mine mere words? Have they not added more nails and lumber to the gate? You had better to forget these words. Mu. I'm reminded of Seng Chan's words upon completion of his beautiful teaching on trust in the heart. He poignantly says, "I have spoken, but in vain. For what can words tell of things that have no yesterday, tomorrow, or today? And this is how I feel." Have I made any sense? Some of you may kindly say yes, but they are words. Have I uncovered Mu? Mu as loving kindness, Mu and compassion of Shakyamuni Buddha, Mu as the miracle of the breath of Buddha nature. Sure, that makes sense on one level. But what about Mu as Shunyata? When a monk asks his question, Chaozhou knows there is no such thing as a discrete being. And there's no such thing as Buddha nature. "Bring me your mind," says Bodhidharma to Eka, "and I will put it to rest." And Eka goes crazy. "How can I bring him my mind?" Probably after weeks, months of pondering this koan, Eka comes to Bodhidharma and says, I've looked and searched everywhere for my mind and I can't find it. And Bodhidharma says, see, I have already put it to rest. So it is with Buddha nature. What is Buddha nature? Where is Buddha nature? Probably the only thing analogous in Western terms would be the concept of the soul. But what is the soul? Where is the soul? Tomes have been written about the soul. And as you know, when Shakyamuni was asked about such things as the existence of the soul, the existence of eternity, the existence of Buddha nature, etc., he maintained noble silence. For all things are impermanent. All things change. The form impermanent takes is shunyata, emptiness. Is Chacho therefore saying no, not nothing, but shunyata? Mu. Is mu shunyata? Shunyata wipes away the monk, the question, the dog, Chacho and Buddha nature. Nothing but emptiness. Nothing but shunyata. Mu. Once again, what have my words done? Have I spoken in vain of things that have no yesterday, tomorrow, or today? Moo. Koans deal with the absolute and relative. What is the absolute and what is the relative in the koan moo? Generally, the one who asks the question asks from the point of view of the relative, and the Zen master's response is usually couched in terms of the absolute. So the question, does a dog have Buddha nature, can be a relative question. And the answer, mu, is the absolute. Why does Chacho at one point give different answers to the same question? Once he says mu or no, and another time he says u or yes. Are both mu and u absolute? Here we must look carefully at the text. Chacho does not say a dog does not have Buddha nature. Nor does he say a dog has Buddha nature. He says mu, he says u. His response to the question in each case is one word. The absolute mu or no, and the absolute ooh or yes. In Zen, there are no opposites. There is no duality. The formula is found in the Heart Sutra. Form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. Form is contained in emptiness. Emptiness is contained in form. Form interpenetrates emptiness. Emptiness interpenetrates form. Good is contained in evil. Evil is contained in good. Good interpenetrates evil. Evil interpenetrates good. Light is contained in darkness. Darkness is contained in light. Light interpenetrates darkness. Darkness interpenetrates light. Mu interpenetrates u. U interpenetrates mu. Yes interpenetrates no. No interpenetrates yes. In the realm of the absolute, yes and no are the same, yet different. In the realm of the absolute, all experience is yes, and all experience is no. In the realm of the absolute, everything is contained. In the realm of the absolute, there is nothing to be contained, and there is no container. There is no dog, no monk, no Chacho, no Buddha nature, no mu. Mu! Mu takes us to the place and language of St. John of the Cross. The last verse of his Noche Oscura, Dark Night. Quédeme e olvídeme. El rostro recliné sobre el amado. Ceso todo e déjame. Dejándome cuidado entre las azucenas olvidado. I lost myself, forgotten myself. I lay my face against the beloved's face. Everything fell away, and I left myself behind, abandoning my cares among the lilies, forgotten. Mu is a noche oscura. It is where you drop and abandon everything and leave yourself behind and forgotten. It is the way that is not the way. It is the way Shto Sichian speaks of in his thunderous poem, The Identity of Relative and Absolute. When you walk the way, you draw no nearer, progress no farther. Who fails to see this as mountains and rivers away? Noche oscura is utter despair, utter frustration. There is nowhere to turn. We are nothing. Whatever we do is pointless. Yet it is not nihilism. It is the profound truth and fact of dukkha, of impermanence. Nothing is as it seems to be. The word seems takes on mythic proportions. It would be more correct to say I seem to see a sunset rather than I see a sunset. I seem to experience Mu rather than I experience Mu. I know nothing because everything is as it seems. Everything changes. And likewise, when I look and look and search for myself, my true self, that which I call Mui, I find Mu. I find nothing. And yet within that nothing is a great big yes, which is Mui, which is Mu, which is me. With Don Quixote, may I say, I am I, Mui, nowhere to be found.